welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Thanks for joining us on this very special time episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We're doing a matinee today, and that's because my guest is living across the ocean, and we want to make sure that she gets some sleep tonight. So I hope that you can join us. And if you are watching and you have somebody else that you know of that has a child that has one of these DISs we've been talking about this month, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, dyslexia, I'm getting confused, you just share this live episode with them as we're watching, because we want you to be part of this conversation. That's why we're live. And but this is a regular episode put on by SPED Homeschool. We are a nonprofit that empowers parents to homeschool children with specialized educational needs. And I also want to thank RightShot for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more from them about halfway through our interview. But I would like to introduce my special guest, Rebecca Ginger from Table Fables. Thanks for joining us today, Rebecca.
No, lovely to meet you. Yes, thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, I'm so glad we were able to get this on the schedule, because we're going to talk today about the hidden advantages of dyslexia and dyscalculia. And I know we usually spend most of our time on talking about the disadvantages, the struggles, the, you know, what can we do to help this poor child that's struggling, and even into adulthood, these things that we carry with us. But thank you for being willing, Rebecca, to share that there is a flip side to this and there are advantages. And I know that starts with your story. And so I would love to just kick off with that, to just share a little bit about your own, I guess it's dyslexia and dyscalculia that you struggled with.
Yeah. Thank you. I was, the sort of typical dyslexic, I didn't know I was dyscalculic when I was at school, but I did learn that I was dyslexic and struggled, a lot, and was in all the bottom tables or whatever. I went through sort of traditional schooling.
Mm-hmm, so did I.
Yeah. And you compared yourself a lot to other mm-hmm. children who couldn't read and nothing really made sense. And I think sort of the added on to the sort of dyslexia thing, if you have dyscalculia as well, people can say, you're really bright and don't worry about being, you're not stupid. But if you can't also do numbers, there's nowhere else for you to go apart from to think you're stupid, because if you can't read and you can't do numbers, what can you do at school?
Right.
I totally did feel stupid and you didn't, couldn't help not comparing yourself and things mm-hmm. like that. I was good at sports. I was okay at that. We didn't go to particularly sporty schools, so I couldn't really show that off in any way. Mm-hmm. I was good at art, but again, lots of people were good at art. Anyway, school was a bit of rubbish. I spent a lot of time sort of keeping quiet was my thing. Mm. You either go really extrovert or really quiet. I just kept really, really quiet, head down. Really hope the teacher didn't notice me, ask me any questions. That was my kind of default setting, was down. I didn't, I would get really good at pretending I'd done stuff. You had a sort of box that you had to go and fill out, your sheet, right, things like that. I would just totally loudly pretend I'd done a sheet and then skip a couple of ones on and not do anything. I'd hid a lot at school. Secondary school wasn't much better, into all the bottom sets. I was with all the naughty kids. I was, I saw it all, because I was in all those bottom sets. And, they're really lovely kids. They were just like me. They were just absolute struggling. We were just all struggling. Right. Nothing made sense. I kept quiet. Some of them didn't.
Right, yeah.
I had a strong family background. I had a sort of mum who went, and we've come from a long line of dyslexics, and I think my dad.
That's pretty typical, yeah.
So there was a sort of great tradition of not passing exams, but doing well in life. So at least I had that as an example. I had a grandpa who didn't pass anything. I had a dad who didn't pass anything. And so my mum was very much like, school's not the only way. You can make it in life, right. Other ways. So I had that as a sort of, so a core belief, I suppose, in me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went on then to become a runner. I don't know if that's what you call it in America, work experience in television.
Oh,
uh-huh. I worked for a long time for free, probably much more than other people working for free, because I didn't have any confidence in myself. But I'm a hard worker and I get on with people. And I think this is where the hidden talents come in. When you're not being able to write stuff down, you have to think of inventive ways of being kind to people, I think, so that people would help me. At university and things like that, I would, make sure I was really nice to my flatmates. They would read over my essays to me.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I remember starting as a runner, I would really go and talk to the people that I needed to, make sure they knew who I was, be really kind to them, do other favors to them, so then they could help me in return. So I think in trying to sort of get round stuff, I sort of probably learned that communication skill. I probably also learned to be very, very creative. And there's a lot of research to say that, this bit of your brain, as it were, that bit of your brain is maybe your English or maths, but you're growing this creative bit of your brain. Explained to me that it was a doctor, they said, if this is your left and right brain and your knuckles are the pathways between your left and your right brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now you'll have roadworks. Everybody's dyslexia or dyscalculia is slightly different. So I'll have a roadblock here and here, and you're trying to get the information from one side to the other. Now you'll have a roadblock here, but that information, like say your IQ, is still pumping from one way, so it just goes down the other highways. So if these two are blocked, massive superhighways. So my maths and English are blocked, but my communication and my creative skills, they're coming huge superhighways. You've got roadblocks here, but these ones are becoming huge motorways, or I don't know what you call in America, superhighways. So that's a kind of really great visual. So the information is still passing through from one side of the brain to the other, but you're growing things. You're absolutely growing things. While the other stuff is suffering slightly, you're really, really exploring and expanding those things. So that is definitely one, I think, superpower. I learned communication really well. I think my visual, I loved watching telly as a kid. I was constantly told off for watching too much telly. I think TV makes sense to me. Visual makes sense to me. So I can absorb a lot of information. When I'm watching a film with other people, people are going, what's going on there? What's going on there? I'm going, well, why? I mean, even just one eyebrow, I totally get that. That means that he's going to murder somebody, an hour down the thing. It's not kind of. I think you pick up on all those cues and those other things that maybe aren't as developed in other people. So I became a producer, director, and I won awards, and I had the longest running shows. I worked for MTV for a long time. I don't know if your older people will know. They say it's still going, MTV, isn't it? But I don't know who watches it. But I made really long running shows for them. And just for parents out there, I did become very successful. So don't get disheartened.
Right.
Try and keep that confidence up. The only thing I would say that is the problem is I was probably as successful or more successful than my colleagues. My colleagues were getting paid more than I was. I didn't have confidence to ask for a pay rise. They would give me pay rises when I was on maternity leave, to try and get me back again. They would suddenly go, oh my God, she's really not being paid anything. Let me give her loads of, a pay rise. But I never asked for anything because I've never had any confidence. I'm working with people who are straight A students and getting the first degrees and things like that. So it's really hard to think that you are worthy of anything. And there's another interesting statistic that 40% of millionaires are dyslexic, but 70% of prisoners are dyslexic. Wow. And you kind of go either way. It really does depend on the parent and those, giving that belief in yourself that you can get through the system. There is also statistics about, though, that dyscalculia, number dyslexia, being bad with numbers actually inhibits your monetary earning power. You can tell at the age of 12, we've got two children, same IQ. One is better at maths than the other one. They're both same as the English, or one could be worse than English. But if it's good at maths, he will go on to earn more money than the other child. So identical IQ, the one that is better at maths will go on to earn more money. It doesn't really matter so much, weirdly, about English. It's all about maths. And the same person who is good at maths at 10 is good at maths at 16, and then is good at maths at university, and then goes on to earn more money. So they've been doing the study for 40 years. So it's a really good thing. So you could definitely survive with our amazing dyslexic and dyscalculic brains, because we will grow other bits of our brains, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there are some disadvantages, I would say.
I want to just hit on a couple of things that you talked about. The part that where we say we're broken and it won't work. Our kids hit those blockages, and parents in turn just think that, you know, the child is being despondent, is fighting against them. You know, that whole process of this really is not making sense doesn't always go through our brains. And yet, you know, hearing your story and where you are, you kind of felt like you were at the bottom of the bottom. And so what was it specifically that your family told you, because in counteracting what the school was telling you, that really made a difference, that was maybe some things you cycled through your own thinking that allowed you to push past that?
There are two things I've sort of done. I've sort of added on to the stuff. This is a bit more practical advice rather than sort of I'll come on to the sort of family dynamics maybe. But practical advice is, I got a weekly. We have this thing called the Beano. It's a really funny cartoon. It's a magazine. It's a comic. And you get manuals and things. It's a bit like The Simpsons. Okay, it's funny. It's a bit rude. I mean, it's not really that rude, but you know, it's funny. You know, and I got that every single week, and that had images and words. Okay, so it's images, images and words every single week, new images, new words. So that is how I learned to read. And I bought my children the same subscription, and I can't say, my son went on from reading that comic to reading Harry Potter. You know, that was it happens in a different way, and it's not, and they don't go sort of up the progressions. They just stick on sort of the Beano, stick on the cartoons. And then one day, weirdly, because they love reading, because they're loving reading this comic, and that's what I did, and I got the annuals, just a lot and lots and lots of comics. Because for us dyslexic, that makes sense. And it means that we're not scared to read, because you've got the images. So you don't have that sort of negative, whoa, I hate that. And I'm still a massive reader now. You know, I'm probably more for a different reader than my other friends who aren't dyslexic. But I've always had a love of reading, because I was given that opportunity just to do cartoons, and it wasn't deemed like a bad thing, and I wasn't kind of, you know, constant thing. So that is one definite thing that I did. For my own children, we were sort of working through those issues of the dyslexia. It was the dyscalculia bit that I just couldn't figure out, which is why I set up this Table Fables. I think I figured it out myself, really. I taught myself stories to remember stuff at school. I had to remember everything via a story. So when I was doing my history or politics or whatever, I would make up stories. I would do acronyms, they're called acronyms, where you write down all the points. You take the first letter of those points. So it's A for apple, and then C, D. Okay, so I would go, and I'd make it slightly funny and a bit rude. So I would go, Anna can't dance, or something like that. Yeah, I'd make up a little poem. So this sounds really complicated, and it doesn't. But anyway, but that's how, and I would have these long poems, but they would all unlock learning. So Anna, standing for A, would be... the atom bomb that fell on Hiroshima or something like that. Okay, and the C would be China in 1965 did blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So all of them would represent something. And all I had to do was remember those poems and they would unlock learning for me. So that sort of, those are two really practical things that we did as a family. And then, as I say, my children were failing at maths, which I've always, always struggled with myself. And so that's when I sort of used those skills. I used the images and I used stories and I combined them with maths. And then that took all the anxiety out. I've just been to, I've been to a conference about dyscalculia, and the statistics about mass anxiety and number dyslexia are kind of scary. You know, it's like nearly half the class have either anxiety or dyscalculia. And it's just not been addressed. It's they're still teaching maths in the same way that they did like 100 years ago. It is rote learning, and all it is rote learning dressed up. So you might have prettier characters and pictures dancing around the thing, but it's still rote learning. You've got to learn, you know, 6 times 7, you know, 4 times 5. It's just repeating. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to my kids, you know, if you have a foreigner and they don't understand you, there's no point saying it more loudly, you know, round the corner. Right. They do to dyslexics. It's like all they do is say it again and say it louder, and or shout at it, or the kid is shouting. Is that going? You got to do like sign language. You know, if a foreigner doesn't understand it, you go.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to make more sense than going, it's round the corner. It's round the corner. You know, it's like, it doesn't.
I love that. And you put that into those terms because, I just gave a talk this last weekend on why we do what we do and how it's not really evidence-based. A lot of the things we do in the school system is just because it makes the test taking and all the other reporting and all the political stuff that led to the way our schools are structured work. And it makes so much sense when you put it into those terms, because the communication, we have to communicate, and communicating to a brain that thinks different than our brain has to be done differently. And I love that visual you gave us earlier about those bigger conduits for creativity when certain things are shut down, and taking advantage of that, which is what you were just talking about. And so that's so important. I just want to let you know if you're watching with us live that you can be part of this conversation. You can put in your comments and questions in the feed, whether you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or Periscope. And we'd love to include you in this as well. And, so
last questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in helping kids to know that what they are producing is worthwhile and working at their own pace to learn things and their own way to learn things, is there anything that you have to share with our audience about helping kids grasp that worthiness when the typical education methodologies tell them they're not?
Yeah. I think I've learned something weirdly. I'm just trying to think what my mum did, and I think it was just, you know, it was just going, don't worry about exams and, you know, things like that. She really made us work hard, you know, there was not, you know, I'm not saying that she, you know, is the laziness thing, you know, we emptied, you know, we washed, we didn't actually have a dishwasher, you know, we washed up every night, we hung up the washing, you know, she always, always made us work really hard, but she always said, don't worry about exams. Not everybody goes down that route. There are other routes. I think so. She really did make that clear. She said there are other ways to the top. Okay. So don't get disheartened. It was really hard to sort of rally against. I mean, thank God she did say that, but you know, it's really hard as a child to sort of believe that or rally against that, or, you know, and even, you know, it is true, but you know, like my dad had a secretary and my granddad had a secretary. I don't know. I've never had a secretary. They dictate stuff. I've had to write emails. So I do think you have to be given those practical skills of writing. So I don't think ignore that or let children not do that. I don't think that's great. But I think it's constantly encouraging them, constantly pointing out the, you know, how they're improving, looking back at where they've come from, maybe is a good one. The other thing that somebody, you know, in my adult life has told me, which I really took it, her granny said to her, you can be whatever you want to be. Okay. You can come over any hurdles you ever want to do. I mean, you know, if any hurdles are set in your way, you can get over them. Okay. And I think that's really helped me setting up a business as well. It's like, don't worry, kids. Just tell your kids it's okay. You can be whatever you want to be. Even if you want to be an astronaut, if that's what you really want to be, you will find the ways, the routes around it. And, you know, and even if you don't get to be an astronaut, but you will be able to put astronauts into space, you know, if your eyesight's, you know, I don't know, colorblind or something, so you can't actually make an astronaut. But just, I think, empowering your children with that knowledge that they can be whoever they want to be. I totally believe that. And you will find the solutions. If you set yourself a goal and you'll find your way around it. And if you just keep, you know, telling children that, I think that's really, really important. Yeah, I think that was what I'd say.
Yeah. And so when, I know you also shared like in your career that there were points where your self-confidence was still really low. And I've heard lately that a lot of the trauma that we experience through education, like just our struggles, can almost appear like PTSD in later life because we're so traumatized by those failures and that consistent failure. Is there anything you've learned in your, you know, adult life in navigating that?
I definitely can agree with you on that. I think teaching myself the times tables, I know that sounds really silly. Will be more for the dyscalculic. I think if you've got both, I think that really does provide trauma. But when I taught myself the times tables through our storytelling technique, I felt intelligent. I felt the thing that I could never, ever do. I could probably learn them for a test and then instantly forget them.
Right.
And I couldn't really do dividing at all. Just, there was no way. So when I taught myself that, I was like, going, oh, I'm not stupid. It was just how the information was presented to me. That to me was so, like, I can't tell you adults, if you're out there, I mean, our technique is aimed at children, but if you can do that, I promise you, it literally unlocks something. It maybe connects some neural pathways that weren't there. But also, it retells a story that, you know, in school that you could never do something. And you go, wait a minute, I can do that. Just present it in a different way. And then, I can move forward. So
yeah, it's crushing those lies that you've allowed yourself to believe that the world has been telling you and saying no. That's not the way it is. I love that.
Yeah. So do just, it's really hard. It is really hard. I have read a lot of self-help books as well about, you know, stopping the negative chat in your head and things like that. That really does help. I would say learning the times tables was a massive one because it proved to myself that I'm not stupid. And that was a light bulb moment.
Yeah. Well, we're going to dive into some questions on math, but I'm going to take a quick time for our sponsor. And then we come back. Ginger and I are going to dive, or Rebecca and I are going to, I'm reading your last name instead of your first name. Yes. That we're going to dive into a lot more math questions, dyscalculia, types of things, which I know is something we haven't addressed yet this month as we've been covering all of these disabilities. So I definitely want to make time for that. And she has some really creative, insightful things to share with us. So you'll want to stick around and pop in your questions too while I'm doing the sponsor spot and as we're transferring over to that so that we can address issues that you have going on at home with your own kids and get some insight into those too. So I'll see you in a second, Rebecca, and we're going to learn a little bit more from our sponsors at Right Shop. So let me pull that information up. But Writeship wants to know, or they're going to want to ask you, how are homeschool writing lessons going for you lately? Are there tears of frustration or long minutes staring at a blank piece of paper because I don't know what to write about? Oh, that's pretty common. Well, finally, there's a solution, Writeship curriculum. Writeship understands the challenges of children writing. Writeship has options for kindergarten all the way through high school. With engaging step-by-step lessons, Writeship gives students the necessary building blocks of the writing process so there's zero frustration. And Writeship not only teaches kids how to write, it shows you how to teach. You'll learn to guide them through the writing process and inspire even the most reluctant writers. Parents rave about the results. Sherry from Florida says, I'm so pleased with Writeship. My eighth grader, who was lukewarm about writing and really didn't write so well, is blossoming. Haley in California says, thank you very much for creating Writeship. It's been a pleasure to teach this curriculum and the results are phenomenal. Our son went from hating writing to asking for more. You can visit writeship.com to take the placement test and find out which level best suits your child, tween or teen. With Writeship, teaching writing has never been easier. So thank you, Writeship, for sponsoring again this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We just are very thankful for that you are funding this so that we can continue sharing and empowering families to homeschool their struggling learners. And I'm going to have Rebecca back. And I just want you to know how much I thoroughly enjoyed everything you shared in this first half an hour with us, because it makes parents feel like their kids aren't alone. It also empowers us to know that there's more beyond the struggle. And so thanks for being open with us and talking about your own struggles and just some of the things that you have found that have really helped in your journey.
No problem. I'm very happy to share stuff and encourage and to, contact me, parents, if you do need to ask anything. But, I'm always here.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to put up your website. It's tablefables.net. And so if you're listening to the podcast, that will help you, because we also turn this into a podcast. And so it's great to have the video. And if we do end up sharing some stuff video wise, and if you're listening to the podcast, just know you can always pop over to the Sped Homeschool YouTube channel, or you can check out Rebecca's website too. You do have some cute little videos. And I looked at your website. You talk about learn funny, and it funny just activates that part of our brain that helps us learn, doesn't it? And
yeah. Well, as I was saying, I was at this, I know all these statistics already, but just because I was at a conference the other day on dyscalculia, that, that anxiety around numbers and maths, it kind of kicks in really early. The researchers were really surprised, and I was a bit like, well, if you're a kid that's gone through it, I wasn't surprised at all. But it's like 4 years old. Maths anxiety kicks in at four, which is just, it's just kind of staggering. It's just like, why is any four-year-old feeling anxious? And the way around anxiety is humor. You cannot feel anxious if you're laughing. Mm-hmm. And we're really passionate about, I love games anyway. I make all my friends play when they come over for dinner. I make my kids play them. In trying to get adults, I think maybe this is why I'm really good at promoting PR, is trying to get adults to play games. It can be tricky,
I don't
know. Want to do it. And
if you have any hints or tips, let me know, because we're having a game night at our house tomorrow night with a bunch of adults.
Okay. My biggest one, I say, if you're not laughing in 5 minutes, we'll scrap the game. I want to scrap the game in 5 minutes if we're not laughing, but pretty much guaranteed within 5 minutes of playing a game, it's got to be the right game, obviously, but you're laughing, okay? And anyway, the bigger thing about laughter is it just reduces all that stress, okay? All of that anxiety, the resistance that children feel to anything. If they're laughing, they're not going to be resistant to it. And if technique's all about cartoons, if they're watching cartoons, what kid doesn't like watching cartoons?
Funny cartoons,
it's fine. You've got them in, then they don't even realize they're learning. That's what I think. Just trying to make sure that they don't really think they're learning. And then, and then the information absorbs in. And we have a lot of I've got three kids myself, and obviously I've got a lot of reluctant friends who never want to play games. So I'm really good at sort of putting up. We have a lot of rewards. Either it's in-house money that you earn. So they, for every times table they get correct, they earn dollars. Table Fables dollars. Every incorrect answer, we take dollars away from them. They can then go off and spend them in our in-house shop. We've also got monetary rewards. We make the subscriptions more expensive, and then we give families money back once they've completed a multiplication task. We found if we made the subscriptions cheaper, families would buy it, but then just wouldn't use it. And that was just no good to them or us, because they wouldn't then go and talk about us.
Right.
So we made it more expensive. Okay. So parents are going, oh my God, I don't want to pay that much. You better, Jimmy, you better get on Table Fable. So they get on it. We take them through an automatic program, and then we give them the money back, whether that family gives the money to the child, or whether they spend it on other educational products, or whether they just keep it in their family budget. It doesn't matter. But it's just a prompt. It's just, it gives a family another way and go, right, let's earn this money back for our family, or for the child, or however each family wants to do it. And we've always got competitions, because I say I like it. We're always giving away. We give away an extra $25 and a toy giraffe at the moment if you can complete them. It's like streaks. I don't know if you know that in TikTok, you have so many streaks. If you go on every single day for 17 days, if you if you do that, we give you $25 and we send you a toy giraffe. So we've always got games and things to keep children playing, excited, happy, and anxiety down.
Right.
Yeah, which is the big thing, which is what I was saying about that Beano subscription, about the reading and the cartoons. Parents often think, oh no, it's not educational enough, and it's not, good enough. They're not progressing as fast as other children. But they are reading, and they are learning, and they're, and they're understanding. So if you're just reading something, you won't understand the definition of, say, desperate. Okay, but if you've got a cartoon with the word desperate, you then go, oh yeah, I get what desperate means. You may not still be able to read it out. You'll just see it, and but you'll see what that word means, and then it'll be repeated again, and you'll go, oh yeah, desperate, you know, and then finally you'll be able to say it, and then you absorb the meaning of it. Whereas unless you ask somebody, or you look up in a dictionary, and I've never met a child that looked up in a dictionary yet. Unless you ask what that word means, can you give me a word? What does inconsequential? That's a good word.
Okay.
It's inconsequential. You know, that punishment was inconsequential, and you've got a kid running out of a class, not paying any hide nor hear of the teacher. Then you may not understand at the first go of inconsequential. You may not understand it, but soon enough you will. So, you know, that's what I'm always like. Fun things, just because they're fun, does not mean that they're not educational. And home educators know that. You're brilliant at that. You know that in spade loads. So I probably don't need to tell you that. But
there's a lot of stuffy home educators. So
reminded of it.
It's a good reminder.
Fun equals learning. It really, really does.
Yeah. We have a viewer who said that she goes, and this is pertaining to our conversation on the first half of the hour, was she said, I homeschool, so I tell all my kids with learning disabilities that if they want to do it, they can. I was told that my learning disability would hold me back and I not be able to do what my peers can. And same thing. So I think that's an ongoing mantra that unfortunately children and adults the same here, because they just don't think the same way. And
I think, you know, setting up a business was really hard. When you set up a business, you don't, I'm sure you're doing your podcasting. You don't know anything when you first set stuff up, and it's only through mistakes. I always go on about mistakes are amazing. You always learn. But I only learned that when I was 40. I say this to my children. My children go, oh yeah, the teacher always tells that us now. So I'm glad it is getting into the education space. But mistakes really, really are amazing. And you learn so much by, you know, failing. And then you go, oh yeah, that's really stupid. That was, what did I do that for? But then you go, oh no, I learned something from that. And I, as I say, yes, setting that goal and just going, yeah, that's where I want to go. I'm going to hit these failures. You know, successful people fail more than anybody else. You know, if they fail, we go, oh, well, never mind, brush it off. Let's try again. Fail, brush it off, fail, brush it off. It's a just continual failure, which, I would say tell all these kids that are failing, going, oh, brilliant, that's an extra badge you've got there. You've got another extra failure badge. You know, it should be not like girl guides or whatever. You don't collect badges for successes. You should be collect badges of failure, as long as you don't repeat the failure.
Right. You learn from it and go on.
Learn, move on. But
just being able to laugh at yourself. I mean, back to that humor that you were talking about earlier and looking at our failures as those stepping stones, but also just saying, I screwed up. I mean, I went for the longest time having misspelled the heading on this broadcast, and I was looked at it and I was like, there's an I missing. I just had to laugh. I was like, okay, well, lesson learned. I think I need to use spell check next time. But you learn and you grow from it.
And those mistakes are good, as you say, that you know, they are. And laughter is brilliant. I always say that, it's sort of, you know, your mistakes are great stories. You can go, so even if it all really messes up, it's a really funny story. But you've got to tell your friends. So that's always good to collect. I've got a lot of funny stories. Or slash failures, one of the two.
Exactly. We'll just consider them encouraging stories. All right. Well, you know, to start out our topic on math, why is it you think that so many children do struggle with maths?
Personally, I think the research is sort of is not quite there yet, but I think it's literally just the way it's taught. Why would anybody like that? You know, I can't understand.
There's a very small fraction of people that like it that way.
What is fun about maths education? I can't understand. You know, the rhymes when you first, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, once I got it, you know, that's fun. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some songs, I mean, I personally can't learn lyrics. I'm very bad at lyrics, so I could never learn my multiplications through lyrics. I don't know anything. You know, Beyonce's good at lyrics, or, you know, I don't know, whoever's singers are good at lyrics, but I don't know anybody else that can ever remember lyrics. So I don't think that's a brilliant way. But I just seriously think that mass education is taught the same way it was taught 100, 200 years ago. I don't think it's changed. I think they've dressed it up a little bit. They've added a few more nice graphics, but fundamentally, I don't think that's why we ours is based on what's called mnemonic system.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
It's basically the peg system of memory. If you hold something onto it, so each of our numbers are characters. So you've got 7 boomerang, 8 is a snowman, 3 is a house, the tail. So we've all got characters, the same characters, they don't change, and they interact together to create a story. And it's that story. We can all remember stories, you know. The Bible is a story for a reason, because it's not just a list of commands going, you've got to do this. You can't remember. It's boring. Yeah. You know, you put it into a story, then it's easier to remember, okay? You know, all information that has been passed down from generation to generation has all been passed down in story format. It's just easier to remember rather than
we're wired for relationships, and that story kind of digs into that part of our brain where that relationship, it becomes more than just a fact. It becomes something that's living and breathing. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, I do remember, this is slightly going off topic, but still, I'm just saying that, you know, animals do it too. I mean, I remember we're doing this study about bees. They don't talk, but they communicate with each other. So they pollen over there, they come back to their mate, they do a little dance, actually. They go wiggle, left, wiggle, wiggle, up, wiggle, 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 right, left, whatever it is, okay? So they'll come back and tell a little dance or story. to the other bee, and the other bee will go, oh yeah, I've got that, and off they go. It's the same thing. I think when we started writing stuff down, we missed a trick with maths. We just went, yeah, there's numbers, remember them. Just remember them. You just got to remember them. Whereas most other things are stories or, you know, are put into sort of more fun things. And for some reason, maths just got completely missed. And also with maths is you're right or wrong. You're right or wrong from a very young age. Yeah. We call them number bonds in England, but you call them, I think, number families, like 7 and 3, right. 6 and 4, 8 and 2. My children, you know, I told them the multiplications and then I registered. They still didn't have the number families sorted. Mm. Okay. And my daughter would go, 6 and 8, mum, 6 and 8. And I'd go, oh my goodness. Oh, you know, you do multiplications, but she couldn't do her number bonds. So then we invented the technique how to do number bonds. And again, just stories. You put two characters together. They can remember the snowman. They can remember the swan. These two together, they never forget them. It literally teach them for 5 days, for 5 minutes a day, not even a whole day. It's literally right. 5 days.
Oh, yeah.
And then they remember it and they never, ever forget it. We've also got about time, learn to tell time. Basically, I'm sorting out all my own childhood issues. Time. My mum got me this watch that had one half was blue, one half was red for past and two. I was like going, oh my goodness, I can't remember which is the past side and which is the two side. I couldn't remember which was blue or red. Anyway, we've got the technique. We've got poos. Excuse everybody. I've got the humour of a 7-year-old girl. Oh boy. We got poos on one side. Poo is past. Past begins with a P. Poo begins with a P. And we've got toilets on the other side. They're all talking. They're all animated. We've got toilets on the other side. T begins with a toilet begins with a T and two begins with a T. So it just instantly, children don't get confused. They never get confused. They know which is the poo side. They know which is the toilet side. Done. Okay. And then the rest of it is learning to, you know, do the time is really easy. It's like, I think because I've got that brain and I think it's like you should always actually go to somebody like my friend was trying to teach us to sing the other day and she's really finds it really easy. And I was asking her lots of questions and she's going, well, it just is. That's what it is. And I was going, well, why is it? It's not natural for me. So can you explain it? But if somebody like a bit like maths teachers, if somebody's really good at it and they find it easy and then they just explain it how they learned it and it made sense.
And so, it's like they just like naturally did it. And it doesn't make any sense when you don't naturally get it.
I think everybody should you should take the people who are really rubbish something, they have to figure out a form and then they should teach it to
others. Teach it. Yes, exactly. I was the same way with my autism and trying to ask my mom, how do I make friends? Oh, you just do. I'm like, that doesn't make sense here. I don't just do that. But, you know, listening to enough resources, I now know how to make friends. But yeah.
Well, that's the same thing. It's like, you know, non-autistic people trying to take autistic people. I'm like, why is that? Let's get an autistic person to teach the autistic person because they know, you know, and it's like, and I think the same with the maths. It's like, get somebody who's rubbish like me. I was rubbish at maths, but I figured it out and I'm continuing to figure it out. And so then I can package it into something that people understand because I don't just go, yeah, that made sense because I know it didn't make sense. I'm just going, yeah, let's package it into something that does make sense. Mm-hmm. And then, and also testing, continually testing. And repeating that information back as well.
So do you find that people are much more permissive of math struggles versus reading struggles?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we all know this, you know, somebody will say, oh, I'm rubbish at maths. You know, and you would never say, I can't read, you know, you just wouldn't say it. Okay. Because, and for some reason there's a disconnect with this, that dyscalculic research is just 30 years behind or mass anxiety. It's literally 30 years behind. So it hopefully in 30 years in the future, people won't say that and say, look, I'm dyscalculic. I struggle a bit, but I can still do numbers. Whereas at the moment they just go, I can't do maths, and that's it. And they are writing off so much of life. You know, we have to pay rent, we have to pay mortgages. They're all in 12-month sections. You get paid, you've got to pay your taxes. You know, there is so much that is numbers. pretty much mm-hmm. half our life is numbers. So, you know, it's really, you know, I find it just, you know, shocking that we can all just go, yeah, I'm rubbish at maths.
What can a parent do then instead of, you know, just kind of giving into, well, yeah, you're just bad at math, to encourage instead of just agreeing that, yes, you struggle. And I guess that's where you're at.
I mean, I think I did this thing with the brains. Okay, this is your, so that's your number brain at the moment. Okay. And it's, you know, it's not that you got your fixed mindset and your growth mindset. I'm sure
mm-hmm. yeah.
everyone's mm-hmm. heard that. So don't, I think, but when we were growing up, I think it was very much a fixed mindset. You're rubbish at maths. You're always going to be rubbish at maths. And we know that that is so not true. Okay. This is your maths brain at the beginning. You can grow it and grow it and grow it and grow it. So your maths brain becomes like this. Okay. It may grow that brain at a slower rate than your friend over here, but you will grow it. And never ever think that you're not going to grow it and that you're not going to be able to do maths, because you definitely, definitely can. The same with dyslexia.
Right.
Brain might be like this. Sorry, I'm trying to hold my hand in the right direction. Your dyslexic brain might be like that, but you will be able to grow it, grow it, grow it. Again, it will be slower, but you will be able to grow it into something that is much bigger. And finding those ways round it, and never giving up, and you will find amazing things along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, all those sort of blocks that you hit, you will find amazing ways to do it. But if you can make it fun, I don't know, you know, I think cartoons, you know, either visually in a book, really, really good for the dyslexics. I would say, I don't think there's anything else out there like us. There are books out there. There's something that's got a very similar name to us. It's not the same. I don't think it was done by somebody who is dyscalculic. It's very complicated. There are different characters for all the different numbers, and each multiplication, each multiplication has a different story. To me, that's not the same. You know, the same cartoon for 8 times 7 is 7 times 8. The same cartoon for 4 times 3 is 3 times 4. It's the same cartoon. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why would you think? Because it's the same number. It's the same characters. So I've really had to simplify everything. And I think this is, so if you've got a child that is dyslexic and dyscalculic, I really have to simplify everything so I can understand it. Okay. I get rid of all the dross, because it's just like, oh my God. You know, I was talking about this with other people, like going into meetings, and people would just go on and on and on. I'm going, what you could have just said, I can say in 5 minutes. Okay, please get to the point and move on. I've got far too many things to do. Just get to the point, move on.
Mm-hmm.
So, don't. It will grow.
Yeah. So as parents are looking at, you know, math programs and different things to use to help their kids. I know, definitely want you to talk about your product, Table Fables. I know we also have a question from a viewer asking about the Waldorf education system for math curriculum. What works, what doesn't, when specifically we're dealing with a student who has dyscalculia, and use that creative part of the brain like you were talking about?
I do think it's, I think I have looked at the Waldorf system. I can't remember it off by heart at the moment, but I think I remember it and then dismissing it and going, oh my God, no, it was, I think it's too boring is what I thought. and a lot of it written down and things. I mean, not that writing, we've got worksheets and everything as well. Right. But I think the biggest thing for anyone who's got dyscalculia is this PEG system of memory. Give them a PEG. Give them a hook to remember stuff. As I say, I could remember my multiplications for a test that next day. So it looked like I was doing okay. You asked me the same question a week later. No idea. But if you've got those hooks, if you've got 3 mouse, 7 boomerang, you know they interact, you know they make 21. Mm-hmm. You've got that cartoon in your head. It's very hard to forget images, you know, especially if they're funny. You know, so that's there's Kumon. Do you know Kumon?
I've heard of Kumon before.
You know, Kumon works. It does work. I mean, rote learning absolutely works. And that's what you used to stand up in school and go 6 times 3 is 18, you know, you know, whatever, and rote learning. But it takes like 6 years. It takes you battled with the hammer for, you know, 6 years going, six times eight is 18. Okay. Which is, and they stopped sort of doing rote learning because it was wasting so much time in school learning and incredibly, incredibly boring. So Kumon or Waldorf or things, they will work, but it will take so much longer. Our technique works in 17 days, 5 minutes a day. So because it's funny, because it's images, it sticks. Okay. And also, once you've done the 17 days, you know it, and it also lasts. It lasts years. For some children, you know, normal attainers or whatever, they literally just have to watch it once, do it, done, 17 days. And then SEN, you know, depending on what, some dyslexics and dyscalculics also just have to watch it once and done. But it's, yeah, it's images, it's stories. That's what we thrive on. That's what we love. We all
but
love.
Also, you're taking away what we talked about earlier. And in the broadcast was that anxiety, that defeat, those blockages that really reduce the confidence in the student by starting out with these types of concepts versus using one of those programs and defeating a child so much down to the point that they just say, I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, a teacher said, gave us a lovely review. We got Trustpilot reviews and she said, you know, don't wait for other systems to fail. Just use Table Fables. I mean, she was a teacher and her own son was struggling and she's done them all, literally all of them. And she was just so thankful when she discovered us. As I said, I think it's because I have the issue. I know the solution. You know, I've got this high IQ. We all have, I mean, pretty much everybody has, but I've gone, right, I need to solve this issue. I need to figure out how to do this. And because I've grown those other bits of my brain through years of sort of failing, it just comes naturally to me. And also because of the TV, you know, I worked in that medium for years.
Right.
I just, that's how I think. And that's how children like to see, you know, information. So for me, it's really easy. It's not the subjects isn't easy, but how to present the information is very easy, so that it's effective and it goes into the long term.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. My middle son struggles with dyslexia, and he is a video person. That's everything has to be done on video, and that's how he reads. And yes, the graphic novels or, you know, just the comic books. He has comic books.
Somebody gave me, which I'd love to, it's Sapiens. It's by Noah, somebody or other. It's Homo Sapiens, about the history of sort of humans. And it's all, it's a really thick book. And I read the book and I loved it. It's got amazing stuff. But somebody gave me a graphic novel and it's incredible. So, you know, any parents out there, it's called Homo Sapiens, Noah. Oh, I can't remember his second name. He's just a very well-known historian. Anyway, so
I think more and more of those types of literature and like videos like you're talking about have been coming out. But again, to be discerning about just, you know, like you were talking about in your program, Table Fables, just how you don't continually replace those numbers because we can be creative to the point where confusing.
Yeah.
And then it's not helpful at all. And
I mean, I do think, you know, we test our stuff for years before we release it. You know, we're sort of much more of an Apple, you know, we test it continually and teach it with children to make sure that it works and to make sure it's simple enough. And as I say, I think because I've got the dyslexic and dyscalculic brain, I have to make everything simple. So I can't overcomplicate things. I think if you're just dyslexic, you can still be quite complex somehow. I don't know. I would love to see a research paper on that, but that's my gut feeling is because I've got the two, I have to make everything very, very simple. But also I think Einstein said, you know, if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't really understand it yourself.
Yes.
And I think that's so true. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything. Like I was saying in meetings, I don't think anything is that complicated. People love to use complicated words to make themselves feel more important. But if they actually can't describe it to a six-year-old, then they don't really understand it themselves. Mm-hmm. So actually, I'm reevaluating that. I just think they don't know it enough, or they haven't thought about it enough, or they're not distilling it down. And that's why I distill everything down to it's really what is going on here, and let's make it super, super simple. And so that all 6-year-olds, I mean, we've got 4-year-olds who do our thing. I wouldn't advise 4-year-olds. I think they should be going out and learning trees.
Yes, exactly. Get those neural pathways embedded in there through activities.
I've got a brilliant, slightly rude way of learning all the trees. I taught my children during lockdown. I'm really obsessed with trees. I can identify all the trees now, and I can identify when all the leaves come down just by the bark. I'm not perfect. It's a work in progress. But and I've taught my children, and then they've been able to teach other children. I think that's also another thing. If you teach somebody and they can teach somebody else. But that's what I think younger children should be doing. And that will come out one day soon. I've just got to make it less rude. It's a bit rude at the moment.
Oh, no.
It makes me laugh a lot. My children are really embarrassed by me, but it makes me laugh. Fortunately, they remember it because it's rude. But we'll figure that one out. X-rated tree identification.
Oh, no. So, yeah, so I want to reiterate where people can find you. It's tablefables.net. And that is specifically, what does that program cover, the programs on your site cover?
So we do from number bonds. Recognizing numbers, first of all. Lots of children write numbers the wrong way around. So they'll write 2 back to front, or they'll write, whatever. So they have to, So they write things all the wrong way around. So, I've just registered. Sorry, me being dyslexic. I've left my dog at the dog thing, and I've forgotten to tell my husband to go and get the dog. Anyway, very sorry about that, but that's just another chapter in my dyslexic life. So we teach number bonds, which is or number partners, is adding 2 numbers together. We do number recognition, which way around, so from that's the really young ones. We teach learn to tell the time. We teach multiplications. We teach dividing, and then we're just about to do fractions, what's called farting fractions. It's a really funny grandpa farting, so that's really great.
Awesome. So, and I think one of our viewers, Kara Sue, who had asked the previous question, this is Table Fables Christian or secular? How deeply embedded are, she just wants to know.
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I was a Sunday school teacher. I was a Sunday school teacher. I haven't really based it around any Christian stories. We have a lot of Christian families who use it. So if that answers your question.
It's numbers and the stories.
It's numbers and stories,
They're funny.
Numbers, stories, funny, And but there is farting and things in there. So I don't know if that's, I don't know. But the children love it. The children really do love it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing today, Rebecca. This has been just a fun conversation, and hopefully just really encouraging for our audience. I know it was encouraging to me, and having my own son that struggles in this area, and just knowing how creative that he is too, and the hope that there are for all of us that have various struggles, that we can move beyond them and conquer them. But just
I'm really happy to help teenagers. I'm really, really happy to help teenagers with if they need math stuff, because I was one of those teenagers. So if you've got teenagers, please do email me, drop me a line. I'll really help them out. I'll give them a live session. We also do free online classes, because I'm a parent myself. I know what it's like trying to set up a new website. You don't have to have a subscription. You literally can join our free lessons and see the technique. We teach them a multiplication and a dividing. So we sort everything out like that. So don't I don't think, you know, and you also have 7 days for free, so you can try it out. You know, then we ask for your card number. But don't worry, it's really easy to cancel. You just press a cancel button. You know, I know what it's like being a parent, but we do the 7 days for free and free lessons. So you can see everything about the technique before you try it. Great. And I can even give you a discount code for your followers.
Yeah, well, I'll be talking to Rebecca about getting her stuff listed on our website, because it definitely is one of those things that we want our continual new website viewers to be able to see and take advantage of. So we'll definitely be popping in and doing more with you in the future. But I just want to thank RightShot for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Next week, we'll be back to a regular time on Tuesday evening, and we're going to be talking about various ways to test and to help students specifically with dyslexia. If you need those testing results, what does that look like and how do you do that? And then thank you, RightShot, again for sponsoring this episode. And we'll be back again next week at our regular scheduled time. But just keep up the good work, Rebecca. It's encouraging to hear stories of triumph over difficulties, and that and not just triumph over them, but over and above them. And your life is definitely that. So it's mm-hmm. definitely an encouraging way to end this broadcast. And
thank you very much for having me. And parents, just keep going. I know what it's mm-hmm. like, the struggles. Try to make yourself laugh, if that's at all possible. Yes. And keep the faith.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you all next week. And definitely check us out on spedhomeschool.com if you have any struggles that you're looking for help with your struggling learner. We're here to empower you. Good night, everybody.
In a world where relationships are easily broken and often discarded, the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast is your lighthouse, guiding the way to hope, restoration, and transformation in Christ. I'm your host and marriage coach, Dana Shea. Join me as we discuss the necessary tools for rebuilding marriages from adversity, betrayal, and disconnection. It's time to reignite love as we rebuild marriages from the ground up. Listen to the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast on lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.